With stations all over the U.S., North America, Puerto Rico, Guam, and by satellite, we are Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Connie Willis, and we are talking with professional remote viewer Lori Williams and remote viewing instructor Lori Williams, the same person. and she's been doing incredible tonight. I really appreciate that. We've got this experiment going on, and I've given her some targets, and she's been brave enough to say, okay, I'll do it. And this was interesting. I said, I will give you this many targets, and, you know, you can choose from other ones if it doesn't work out. And she's like, you know, what? She didn't even understand that. I mean, she was just confident to do the ones that I gave her, and we see what we get. So that's really exciting. So the second one, she knows at this point, it's the pineal gland. And I've heard so many people talk about the pineal gland and what is needed. Is that our third eye? We think it's our third eye. We don't use it, so we need to open it up. And here's methods of opening it up. And we got to eat this kind of food and drink this kind of drink and say these types of meditations. So I said, hey, Lori has to do this. 87% accuracy rate. She did a wonderful job with Sasquatch, and now the pineal gland, she's given us some good stuff. And she left us hanging. So, Lori, we'll let you go back to your story, set us back up, and get us ready for this really far-outreaching area that you're going to take us to.
Okay, well, excuse me. So what I was sharing was that I really feel that the pineal gland is ancient, purposeful, and that it really comes from wherever humanity was seated. I mean, it was put there almost like a tether or a beacon, and that this is a signal. It almost like it signals subconsciously that we're able to communicate subconsciously with whatever beings or God or whoever it is that put us here. We're able to communicate subconsciously, accessing higher self, learning while sleeping and meditating through the pineal gland. I feel it's like an antenna or a beacon. And the monitor asked me, how can this be accessed or enhanced or simulated or utilized? And, you know, the interesting answer was shades of blue stimulate this part of the human being, almost like you can look at certain shades of blue like turquoise or teals that are really luminescent, almost like a brilliant peacock blue. Looking at blue shades is calming and stimulating to the pineal gland. Rest, deep breathing, clean air, nature, exercise in beautiful surroundings, consuming healthy, vital green foods that are live, prayer, meditation, quiet, loving thoughts, gratitude, generosity, and surprisingly, this came as a total surprise, fear. That fear actually stimulates and activates communication when it's utilized correctly. And I'm not saying that fear is a really good thing. I'm just saying that that's what came through, that fear is a stimulus to the pineal gland. And that would kind of make sense because you notice that people who've been through a lot of trauma tend to be extra psychic. Have you ever noticed that?
I have. And, you know, to open up, if there is a fear, to give you the information that you need at that time, I would think too, right? You know.
It seems that somehow fear plays a role with the pineal gland. It's like an electronic bug, but instead of being used for eavesdropping, it's used to connect humans with higher thoughts, information, other dimensions, etc. And it's not inert. It's not obsolete. It's being used even when the host, you and me, for example, even when we're unaware, it's almost like we're leading double lives. I thought we're leading double lives, but it's as though it activates while we're sleeping, if that makes sense. So I was wondering, you know, what does this do? It seems this is kind of juicy information, but it's almost like it's cabling us to another world or connecting us to the world. Mm-hmm. And it just reminded me that we are more than this body, and what the heart is to love, the pineal gland is to the universe. That's what came through, those exact words.
Wow. Say that again.
So what the heart is to love, this aspect of ourselves, the pineal gland, is to the universe.
That's something to write down. I mean, that's
It's very, very profound.
That's deep. Absolutely. That's wonderful.
So So I asked, is there anything that we can do to increase our understanding or our awareness of it? And the answer I got was yes and no. You can focus on getting time alone in nature. You can focus on nature's beauty. But there will always be aspects to the functioning of this mysterious organ of which you'll never be aware, because that is its dual nature, the heart of its purpose. It's what makes this reality bearable, even though you don't feel the relief consciously. This is the pineal gland helps this reality be bearable for us. Not that we're living in some horrible, unbearable thing, but I think that it would be much more unbearable if it wasn't for the pineal gland, and kind of almost like giving us a release at night when we sleep, when we dream. And I realize there's some people who have a really hard time. They have nightmares. They've got PTSD and different things. But I feel like in deep, deep sleep, there is kind of a release, and that the pineal gland is kind of the key to that release. So then I kind of just wrote up, I was trying to find out what's the purpose, and I was getting kind of a summary that says, this reality is often really tough, but we receive comfort, wisdom, and relief when sleeping or meditating through this aspect of our being, the pineal gland. We may not consciously be aware of it, but we receive communication of a comforting nature, guidance, reassurance, and the respite of a visit home, in quotation marks, home, even when we don't recall it later. So, you know, whatever home is for us, I feel like the pineal gland is a key to that.
So what's, were there more questions before I ask? Was there anything else you found out?
Nope, that was it. That's the end of it.
So what is your overall on that? I mean, wow, that's amazing. I mean, that is an antenna, the creators of us. It's almost like, I mean, you know, when people talk about implants, and people will say, well, if there's a metallic type implant in you, that's man-made. If it's one that's kind of swirly and kind of organic, then that's an ET implant. I'm just telling you, just saying. And then you bring it up like that to where, you know, that's kind of freaky. You know what I'm saying? Without me even saying it, you know where I'm going with that? That's pretty amazing from some of the things you said.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was an ET or anything, but it did seem almost like it was like an implant, but it was it's an implant that's genetic, that's being passed from, you know, through generations, and that has been part of our human organism, the makeup of our body, for time immemorial, since we were created, or seeded, or however you look at it, that pineal gland is there, and that is its purpose, is to act like an antenna, a beacon, a signal, a connection to a higher aspect of ourselves. I mean, don't you ever sense that there's a higher aspect to yourself that's like, oh, Connie, no, don't make that phone call, you know?
Don't
say that to this person. Those kinds of things, that little, that still small voice of wisdom that warns us, or that, you know, connects with us and gives us, maybe even sends us songs. I remember one time really angry, I wanted to call some company. I'm going to call them. And then I suddenly realized I'm hearing Let It Be in the back of my mind. You know, I wonder sometimes if that's the purpose of the pineal gland, that's what came through in this. I'd never even thought about the pineal gland. But in this session, all of a sudden it was just clear as a bell that that's its purpose, is to be like an antenna, a beacon, a tether that would connect us to higher thoughts and the higher aspects of ourselves or God, or however your listeners choose to interpret.
Yeah, I was brought up in a way that, you know, when I would hear anything, it was the Holy Spirit, you know, because of the way I was brought up. But some people will go, oh, that's my you know, Uncle Sam that died, you know, 18 years ago talking to me. And other people would say, oh, well, if you're a remote viewer, you'd say that was a P7, right? It's P7. That's a little remote viewing thing. But, you know, would you say that reflects the third eye, as people call it, the third eye?
Yeah, I really do. I feel like that is, for me, that's, I mean, and I'm just trying to interpret now what I got in this session, which, you know, was really out there. in a way, you know. But and I want people to know, not every session is like this one or the one on the Bigfoot. But when you get into
some good targets, baby, come on.
Yeah, these targets are lend themselves to this kind of thing.
Yes,
but
yeah.
I do feel like it is third eye. It's our connection to our psychic intuition. It's the connection to that which we consider to be God. You know, if you're an atheist, you don't believe in God. Maybe you believe that you do have a higher self or a part of yourself, an aspect of yourself, which is higher.
So now we gotta get that monitor to say, okay, wherever it's connected, you know, go there and tell us what that connection is, right?
Yeah, go to the other side of the
phone
call.
Go to the other side. Oh, no, she's going to bi-locate and never come back. did that happen with any of the sessions, at least the first two? Did you bi-locate at all?
I really did have that sense, especially with the Bigfoot one, when I sensed myself in that cave with that inky blackness, and it felt... you know, I've learned to do this thing that I call toggling the line, where, you know, because Ingo Swann used to discourage his viewers from bi-locating, because CRV is considered an interview and report methodology, and the key to the whole thing is that the subconscious mind is being interviewed by the conscious mind. The conscious mind is kind of like a journalist and is getting information from the subconscious, which has access to everything, all the information, like it's connected to the great big cosmic database in the sky, so to speak. And so what would happen is these viewers would bilocate, and suddenly they'd just be staring off into space, and there would be no communication. It's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. So Ingo would be, you know, hey, come on, come back. You know, come on, you got to answer these questions. Well, at one point I discovered after about, I think I'd been viewing for about 11 years when I started having, getting tasked with some targets that were pretty esoteric. One of them was an off-planet target on Mars, where I saw obelisks and all these things. And when I did that session, I realized that I was bilocating, completely bilocating, and it took amazing self-discipline and strength to continue writing down what I was getting, because I just, you know, wanted to just be there and not say anything, not write anything down. And, of course, Jim is a wonderful monitor, and he would very gently say, you know, could you say that out loud? Could you write that down?
Aww.
Could you sketch that for me? He would just, you know, whatever I was, and just get me to keep talking. And so at one point I realized that it was a really delicate balance where you can toggle this line between bilocation and doing your CRV reporting and continue to experience the bilocation while you're writing. But it's your handwriting becomes almost illegible, and I have very neat writing. But when I'm doing remote viewing, Jim says he can always tell when I'm really on target because my handwriting just becomes almost illegible, and it becomes very difficult to spell, for example. Spelling is a left brain thing, so your spelling goes down the tubes, and it's very hard to stay in structure. But the most amazing stuff can come through if you can get that delicate balance and learn to toggle that line between bilocating and or extended remote viewing. Now, I don't feel that bilocation and extended remote viewing are the same thing. Extended remote viewing is a technique just like controlled remote viewing is, and bilocation is an event that occurs to you, and you can't really control it. You can't make it happen. But when you do get really deep into a remote viewing session, you can definitely bilocate. And one of the strongest bilocations I ever had was when I was trying to help this young woman who was trying to find out if her mother had been murdered. And I hadn't let her tell me anything, so I didn't know what she was there for. I didn't know that she was trying to find out if her mother had been murdered. But I suddenly found myself sitting in a bar. I could see the neon signs of the bar. I could hear the glasses clinking. I could feel the coolness of the surface of the bar itself as I leaned on it. And the cigarette smoke was so strong I could barely stand to sit there. I mean, I was totally there, 100%. And this woman was sitting next to me, and she had short, dyed red hair. She looked like she'd been, you know, around the block a few times and hung up wet or whatever they say, you know.
Rode hard and hung
yeah,
up wet.
Yeah, rode hard
like
and put up wet. And
is
I, you don't want to say to somebody, hey, was your mother a barfly who chain-smoked and drunk like a fish, you know? But that's what I actually had to say. I said, did your
that's
mom
funny.
Hang out in bars? She was like, yes. Did she drink a lot? Yes. Did she have short, dyed red hair? Yes. Did she chain smoke? Oh my God! Like 3 packs a day. I mean, it was really amazing,
wow.
And so it was the most amazing bilocation experience I've had. Actually, even though I was on Mars and saw these obelisks and all these other different things, this was the strongest bilocation. I mean, literally, the cigarette smoke was about to choke me, and I literally thought I was there. I mean, I felt
wow.
totally 100% that I was there.
And instructors and monitors, yeah, they don't want you to do that because they want you to continue reporting. However, if you get to bilocate as a remote viewer, you want to stay there.
Yeah, and you don't want to report. just like you said, you didn't like to do the data keeping. When you're bilocating, you don't want to have to talk. You don't want to have to write. But if you can, it makes you really a world-class remote viewer because how many people have that ability to bilocate and continue
yeah.
reporting at the same time.
That's
it's
incredible.
A really tough thing. A lot of times people will call me and say, hey, I've taken all, you know, I've taken basic, intermediate, advanced remote viewing from so-and-so, and I'd like to come take your Beyond Advanced class. And because I think I'm the only person, I'm not sure, I mean, I created this class, so I don't know that anybody else is teaching it, but, you know, or teaching to that level. But I tell people, I'm sorry, I can't just let anybody take this class. You have to have developed a certain level of prowess that you can achieve it. I hate for people to spend money and not achieve what they're coming to get, right? So I really insist that people will show me their work, and I have to work with them long enough to really know what they're capable of before I let them take this particular course. You know, so it's kind of an interesting thing.
It's all interesting. And so we wrapped it up. Number one, Sasquatch. Number two target was the pineal gland. We've got some great answers for both of those. Thankful that you got to get through these. Now we're going to be coming up with number three. We're going to take a break here before we come up to number
three. And I have no idea what number three is. None.
Okay. Yay. Okay. So everybody stick around. And this one's going to be very interesting as well. So remote viewer, professional remote viewer, and remote viewing instructor. It's Lori Williams on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, last night, if you were tuned in to Coast to Coast, you heard one of my buddies, Bill Bean. He was discussing demonic possession and what it was like growing up in a house possessed by evil. Good guy, good man, totally good man. Well, tomorrow night, George Knapp is going to be on, and he's going to be talking about UFOs, you know, and, you know, that's his thing, right? Jeremy Corbell's going to be there. And also, he's going to be talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and how that most famous album, you know, in the history of rock and roll has done a lot of shaping with the history and popular music and progressive sounds and mind-blowing experiences shared by so many people. So that's going to be tomorrow night. And then on Monday, George Norrie is back, and he's got some great stuff too, as always. So if you're interested in what's coming up or what you missed yesterday so that you can also be a Coast Insider, go to our website at coasttocoastam.com. It's another very interesting show here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. The Real Theater of the Mind is happening, especially tonight with our remote viewing experiment. And professional remote viewer Lori Williams is with us. She's elected to say, yeah, Connie, I'll take some of these targets on and we will put them on the air. And I will do them without a problem. And it's great. It's been great. So the first one was a Bigfoot, because we were celebrating 50 years of the Patterson-Gimlin film, and I thought that'll be a good one, especially because I enjoy Bigfoot as well. A lot of Bigfooters out there, and we got some information. And by the way, I don't know a lot about it because I didn't read it yet or watch the video, but I do know a little bit about Dr. J. Matthews, his big reveal, or great reveal, or the reveal that he just did recently with his conference and his book and his videos that are out now, that did talk about, you know, the great reveal of the Bigfoot, or the big reveal, but the reveal. One of the things that I did catch from it is that they were plant eaters, and it was interesting that Lori brought that up. in her remote viewing. That was really, really interesting. And then the pineal gland, and that being the third eye, and she also getting a reflection of that, and a cosmic beacon type thing. Very, very interesting stuff. And she has an 87% accuracy of when she does a target through the database that she's been doing for years and years and years to get that accuracy rate to where we know that that's the nice medium there at 87%. So now we have one more target. So Lori's husband, Jim, monitors her. And so Jim and I know, we corresponded back and forth. So he knew the targets, and he was helping to get the questions that I had asked, like, you know, origin, purpose, this and that, of the different things that I was looking to get answers for on the targets. And the third one was interesting. And she guessed the first one, Bigfoot. The second one she got during the middle of the remote viewing session. And then this one, she has no idea what it was. But Lori, you know, describe what you want here at the beginning. I know that today when I asked, hey, do we have all three? What, you know, is everything cool? Everything good? There was a little bit of hesitation about doing this on the air and describing this target on the air. There's a bit of a concern.
Yeah, well, you know, I started this one, I guess I started on the 18th, and we're on the 20th. So I started it the day before yesterday at almost 10:30 at night, and I had no idea. I was told the target is a location, describe the location. So, you know, I dive in, happy to do it, get going on it, and, you know, and then it just got weirder and weirder. Well, it got kind of sinister, and I said to Jim, I'm kind of concerned about this one. You know, either I'm totally just building a big imaginary castle that isn't really real, and you know, and it's just all bullshit,
What?
Oh, sorry, excuse me.
Okay. Hello.
Or, oops. Anyway, or it's, or this is something that is really kind of scary for me, you know, and I wonder if, you know, and I thought, well, we're only on the 18th. I said, maybe I should just jump to number four, you know, because she only needs three, so I could do the first one, second one, maybe a fourth one instead.
Yeah, I gave her five, yeah. I gave her five to try to get three done. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So I said to Jim, maybe that would be the better way to go, you know, and so he was like, oh, well, okay, you know, if that's what you want to do. And then, of course, you know, we did a little bit more yesterday, and it was on the same one, on number three, and it was still kind of going in the same direction. And then today he texted me while I was teaching and said, I just spoke with Connie, and, you know, she really wants you to do this number three. And I said, well, that's probably the only one we're going to have time to do anyway. I don't have time to start a whole new one now, you know, because we didn't.
Oh, okay.
So, okay. I said, let's go ahead and just finish number three. But so I'm hoping, you know, like I said, I don't know if this is garbage or if this is something that, you know, since I have no idea what the target is, you'll just have to tell me. I'm just going to share it. And if it turns out I'm totally nutsky, you can just say, well, sorry, you missed that one.
Okay. And know this, too. I mean, know this, that I don't know what the answer is either. You know, like the Bigfoot, I've gone out myself. I've had experiences. So it's really cool to hear what you have to say. The pineal gland, you know, you've heard a lot of this and that. This one, I've heard some things. I mean, it was obviously worthy of the question. In fact, the question was given by our executive producer. And I don't know if she wants me to say that or not. Sorry, Lisa, if that's the case. Everybody knows who she is. But, you know, so I don't know the answer either. But, you know, Jim today was like, didn't want to do it. And you know, if you feel uncomfortable at all, I don't want to do that. I don't want you to feel uncomfortable or unsafe or anything. And I, you know, he had that concern. So I'm glad that you have decided to do it, because I really want to know the answer. And I know a lot of other people will too. But if you really feel concerned, we certainly don't want to put you in a position where you feel in danger.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I just got to share what I got, and,
okay,
and it turns out that, you know, and it might just be, like I said, it just might be my imagination gone wild, or it might be something really valid. I don't know. One of the things that I did discover, though, is that when I started, you know, I was feeling kind of tired and different things, and I was kind of like, I wonder if this is really, if I'm really connecting, but then when I talked to Jim that night, he said, well, your very first perceptions were something that is known, and they are correct. And I thought, well, if I started out correct, then who knows, maybe the rest of it's correct too. And so I felt like I should go ahead and proceed with it. And so
Okay, so let's
just go ahead from here.
Okay. So you wanna describe it your way, and then at the end I'll tell you. And
you'll give me the big reveal.
Yeah. The other reveal. Okay. Yes, exactly. Okay.
So I started out first with an ideogram, which is our symbol that represents the gestaltic ideas of the target, of inclined land, really steep inclined land that was rocky and gray and brown and rocky and hilly, and slanted and steeped. And I was seeing shadowed shades of light and dark, grays and oranges, round, small, numerous, partially lit, scattered. Then I moved up 50 feet and was looking down on top of it, feeling like it's very barren, open, and dark. And I started sketching, this kind of very close up of this very steep side of something. I felt like it was rough, rocky, orange, white, gray, shadowed, steep. Then I wrote, move an appropriate distance beneath the inclined land. So this actually was Jim asked. He said, move an appropriate distance beneath the inclined land and describe. And I was like, oh, do you want me to go like underground? And he said, yes. And then I heard clinking sounds. I was picking up white, shiny, tunneled. And then I moved to the tunneled. And I was getting like a hallway, a big long square hallway, like square, concentric, white, pristine, well-planned, hidden. I kept hearing these clinking sounds. I don't know what the clinking sounds are. So then I had this really funny image in my mind of that scene in that hilarious movie where, I just can't think of the name of it, the guy who's like, oh, Randy, baby, who was that? What's that guy?
Oh, that was Austin Powers.
Austin Powers, and
yes.
He's stuck in that tunnel. He's stuck in that white hallway, and he's going back and forth with the little cart, and he can't get anyway. So I was seeing a hallway that looked like that hallway in that Austin Powers movie, and so I was, after I was hearing this the clinking sounds, mechanical up and down motion, shiny, chrome colored, narrow, curious. I felt like I was curious, but that. If there were people there, they were kind of just ignoring whatever was going on, and that there was a functionality to this place, some motion, transportation, heating, and I felt like this place is underground, it's planned, it's built. So Jim asked, well, could you move to whoever built it and describe? So then I was getting these tall, thin, regimented, disciplined people who had been scouted out. I got, like we called it, a P7, where you kind of get something and you have to write it in quotation marks. You feel that it's almost like it's not your voice. It's coming from somewhere else.
The pineal gland.
Yeah, the pineal gland. So I was getting, scouted out, walking in unison, side by side, male and female, quiet, shuffling sounds. So it was almost like I'm watching people walk around in this thing, and I'm seeing kind of a spoked area, like spoked hallways that connect to a centralized thing, a centralized hub. And so anyway, I felt like it was very deep underground. So that's where I stopped on that day. And then the next day I started again. And and I felt that there were some strange biologicals there, whether they be human or whatever. But I felt like there were living beings there, and they were rather odd. And so then I was seeing, this dark-haired male walking, very stoic, very, just there to do a job. Very focused, single-minded, intense, and I was suddenly seeing like a man in a lab coat kind of thing. And a lot of times when you see a visual like that, it can be symbolic. And I felt that there was like a military connection to this, and that it was experimental, scientific. That the whatever they were experimenting on, with the experiments that are going on there, are really out there. That there's testing going on. That it was cold and calculating, and yet for the people who were there, it's kind of like all in a day's work for them. So then I was asked to move to the object of the experimentation and describe. So move to what is being experimented on, in other words.
Excellent.
And I felt like whatever was being experimented on was helpless, alone, was living, biological. I felt like it was non-human, what I was looking at, that it was kind of a yellow-orange color. And that this poor thing, whatever it was just very sad and being, felt very trapped, being held against its will, that it was hairy, furry, soft, very large. I wasn't sure what it was, what its species was. It might have been just an animal. And I felt like it was just really lonely and sad and solitary, one among few. So to me, it felt like it might be some sort of rare creature that's being experimented on, and that held in captivity against its will. So then I was asked to move to the end result of the experiment. I kept getting the word fastidious. I don't know why, but I felt like it was no longer viable, at the end of this experiment, this animal was no longer alive, that it was no longer viable, and that that it was kind of cut short, and that this was really unexpected. So then I moved again to the builders. I felt again that there were several. They were male. They were big. And I felt that the people who actually physically built this were just kind of large guys that were laborers, essentially, overworked guys that were just kind of being used to build this thing. So then I was asked to move to the mastermind behind the building of this place. And I found this person to be very astute, wealthy, focused, family-linked. And then, you know, suddenly lots of conspiracy theories started coming to mind, you know, the Rothschilds, the Bilderbergers, that sort of thing. And I felt like whatever this is all part of a bigger plan. Like that this, what I'm getting, the information that I was getting was just a small piece, like a cog in a big machine. That this place was constructed for a special use, very secretive, polished, that only the very select are allowed there. The cream of the crop scientists, for example. And that the goal, whatever they're trying to achieve, is so far out there that it was really even difficult to comprehend a remote view, because it just almost like it's just not even on the table mentally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of had the idea of like, oh, some secret underground lair like Austin Powers would talk about. But there was, so I'm laughing about that because Austin Powers, of course, is a very funny movie. But the target itself to me didn't seem funny at all. It seemed like it was centered with experimentation, exploitation, and that everything there was state of the art, scientific. Okay, so then I resumed tonight before we got together, and so you know we got in from teaching the class, and I had a couple hours before we got together, so I wanted to dive back in and kind of get more information on this. And so Jim asked me to move to the most important bio, or the most important person, or whoever is the most important biological there. And I got that this was a very powerful male, white, Caucasian, older, gray-haired, that the person there that was the most powerful, or whatever. And then I had, like, crazy ideas of, like, Doctor Who. Now, when I say that I had these ideas, these are things that, to me, are symbolic. They're not the target. They're not what we're looking at. They're just little things that pop in the conscious mind's attempt to make sense of what's coming from the subconscious mind. So it's like we're drinking from the fire hose. The subconscious mind is so fast and so gives us so much information, but it doesn't speak English. So as the conscious mind's trying to make sense of things, it'll pull up little pictures like Austin Powers, Doctor Who, that sort of thing, to kind of give you some symbolic ideas of things. And so I just kept getting that it was very scientific. The word fastidious kept coming up. I still don't know what that means. So then I was asked to move to the plans and intentions of whoever it is that's in charge or trying to accomplish something here. And I got that these plans were serious, they're worldwide, that for me they seemed scary, I felt concerned. And for the people there, the people who are really involved in this mission or whatever you want to call it, that it was all important. It was a life mission, all-consuming, worth giving their lives for, involving mankind, involving the future. But I didn't know exactly why. How was it involving the future? And I felt like the goal was to gain power, to retain power, and to guarantee the future for himself and his family, whoever this leader was or whoever the head person was. Again, I got the term underground lair. And I was picking up these ideas of like the CERN, C-E-R-N, the Hadron Collider, coming in, and I didn't know how that connected to this. But when I was asked to move to the experimentation, those were the first things that came to me. I set those aside, again, got scientific, complex, very complicated, way over my head, top secret, well guarded, and that there was definitely a human element. It's far reaching. It involves mankind. And so I was asked, move to the involve mankind, involving mankind, and describe that. And then I kind of got one of those things where we put it in quotation marks, that it was somehow climate related. So then I felt like, okay, I need to just kind of gather my thoughts here and just kind of summarize this as an interim summary. And so I was saying, well, this target involves a location that contains an underground element that's hidden. It's top secret, involves experimentation, has to do with climate, the future of the planet and mankind. And the area is very mountainous. And at that point, this was tonight, right before we met. I guess it was probably an hour or so before we met. But I suddenly, when I realized I was suddenly just kind of floating over these mountains that were high mountains. I felt like there was snow. It was cold. Very mysterious, that there are man-made vessels coming and going from these mountains.
And I hate to stop you at this point. Wasn't meaning to, but we got to take a break. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM with Lori Williams and what she's found out about the target that I'll reveal when we come back.